This is The Scoop, a weekly regional roundup of stories from remote radio stations in British Columbia. Each week, The Scoop features news created by fellow LJI journalists in the communities of Smithers, Prince George, Nanaimo, Burnaby, and the Comox Valley. LJI is the local journalism initiative, and it's how your best local news is funded on these participating stations. Now, let's see what's happening this week in BC.
Today on The Scoop, the new Mosaic Community Clinic in Burnaby plans to provide culturally safe, trauma-informed healthcare, which aims to serve newcomers to Canada, persons who identify as First Nations, Inuit, and Métis, as well as new mothers and their babies, or people living with complex mental health issues, and people experiencing homelessness or precarious housing situations. Danny Nesvandarani in Burnaby at CJSF will bring us more on that one. Ian Gregg at CFUR in Prince George is looking into how the University of Northern British Columbia plans to follow through on its plans to roll out compost operator duties into other existing staff positions, leading to the curtailment of the compost operator. Stay tuned for that one. A collaborative project headed up by the Comox Valley Regional District is being recognized with a Climate Adaptation Award from the Federation of Canadian Municipalities for their Dyke Road Park project. Heather Watson at CHLY in Nanaimo brings us that story. And in Northwestern BC at CICK News, we take a look at this year's All-Native Basketball Tournament taking place in Prince Rupert. Stay with us.
Eva Spencer, Vice President of the All-Native Tournament.
And Eva, can you tell me a little bit about the tournament? How did it start yesterday? It was a little bit of a last-minute opening ceremonies, but Kikatla did an amazing job. Tell me a little bit about how that came to be and what happened.
About 3 weeks before we started, we got this call from Bella, who were initially supposed to be the ones doing the opening ceremonies, that they had to back out because they had so many deaths in the family, They had so many deaths in the community, so they chose that they would back out just due to respect. So at that time, then, we were lucky that Kikatla had put their name down to be to try to be the host next year. So we immediately phoned Kikatla and asked them if they would like to be the host this year. And they were very, very excited. So luckily for us that with their response, immediate response of yes, that saved us a lot of figuring out what we should do next.
I know you've been involved with this tournament for quite some time. How did yesterday's opening ceremonies kind of face up to others? Because it was quite powerful.
Well, a little bit hard for me to answer because it was very nice, but at the same time, I need to be kind of biased because I am from Kikatla.
How did it feel to see your nation open the tournament this year?
Well, it felt really good, just for the fact that, you know, they did so awesome for last minute, like give them 2 weeks notice that they would be doing the opening for us. It was very impressive.
I guess just the last thing, you know, what's your favorite part about the tournament? What makes it all special?
The fact we, you know, all these teams are coming, and then you have all the spectators. It's the spectators because then you have all the old friends coming back, and then you meet new friends.
Great, Eva. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the tournament.
Yes, I will. Thank you very much.
So, on behalf of the House of Bloom, the Gatiques, and Ally, Sintan Triads, thank you very much. And now next is the Bear Country Earth Talk.
What? This is ACHLY and CVOX News Update.
I think it's really valuable for the community to be able to have a project that's in the Comox Valley recognized at a national level. I think it'll really give other local governments from small communities to ideas and inspiration to be able to tackle their own projects.
The Comox Valley Regional District, or CVRD, received a Sustainable Communities Award this week for climate adaptation from the Federation of Canadian Municipalities Green Municipal Fund. The award was given on Tuesday, February 11th at the Sustainable Communities Conference in Fredericton, New Brunswick. The CVRD did not attend and will receive the award in the mail. The award recognizes work done on the Dyke Road Park Project, a collaborative effort between the CVRD and many partners, including Comox First Nation, Project Watershed, Union of BC Municipalities, Stewardship Centre for BC, Nature Trust of BC, Real Estate Foundation of BC, Aquatic Ecosystems Restoration Fund, Guardians of Mid-Island Estuaries, and Pacific Salmon Foundation. The collaborative project is being recognized for its nature-based approach to shoreline management, reducing erosion and flood risks. The CVRD's Manager of Parks, Mark Harrison, says that collaboration was a major contributor to the success of the project.
I think one of the biggest successes was the partnerships, and specifically the partnership with Comox First Nation. So Comox has been involved with the project from the onset, and having their contributions and their inputs have been extremely valuable throughout the whole project. So having them there, making sure that all the archaeological and the cultural sensitivities of the site were respected, I thought was probably the most critical part of that whole project.
Another collaborator in the Dyke Road Park project is Project Watershed, a not-for-profit society based in the Comox Valley that does research and restoration work in coastal, estuarine, and freshwater systems throughout the North Island. Caitlin Perchelski is the executive director of Project Watershed and says the group's role in the project has been largely to inform the ecological restoration elements, while other partners took on different sides of the redesign.
So we focused on the foreshore and some of the riparian works, whereas some of the other folks were actually thinking of the functionality of the park from more of a social perspective. So they were thinking about things like making the parking lot greener, reducing the overall footprint of concrete on the site, making the social values of the park really shine. So they're rejuvenating the boardwalk, they're changing the bird viewing platform. So all of these things are going to make this space a really excellent place to get out and view the estuary and learn a little bit more about the culture and environment in our local setting. So it's overall a really cool project in that way.
Perchelski says climate adaptation work in this case meant highlighting Comox Road as vulnerable to coastal flooding and strategizing to buffer and protect the important transport corridor.
It's one of those really interesting areas where you can do work that's beneficial to the environment that also really benefits human infrastructure as well. So it's really a sort of co-benefit situation. So in the case of Dyke Road Park, we're building up the landscape adjacent to the road. So the road will be protected from higher water levels or storm surges. So if you see things like sea level rise or increased storm frequency, this will help protect the road. But the interesting part is we're also restoring the environment through this work. So it will also have benefits to things like salmon and birds, and the environment overall, water quality. So we have sort of this mutual benefit between these two things where there's a human benefit and a benefit for the natural environment as well.
The CVRD's Manager of Long-Range Planning and Sustainability, Robin Holm, says that this award recognizes the forward-thinking nature of this major collaboration project.
It really recognizes all of the hard work that the entire team put into this project. It really was innovative in its approach and at times, you know, challenging to keep navigating the, you know, multiple project objectives. But I think that what we're seeing now is that with tackling climate change and building climate resiliency, we really need to be thinking outside the box. We need to be thinking about how we can ensure that there are a number of objectives that are being accomplished when we're taking on such a big project.
Holm says she hopes the success of this collaboration will set the standard for future projects.
There's been a number of really, I would say, good relationships that have been established through the project partners. There's been trust that's been established. There's been essentially a roadmap that's been created on how to tackle these multiple partner, multiple jurisdiction projects. And so looking to the future, I think we have a really good, you know, roadmap of how we would approach these. Again, we can look at this project, we can learn from those experiences and then be able to tackle new projects, greater complexity, with a better of understanding of how to work together.
Parks manager Harrison says this recognition means a lot for this community of relatively small size.
The fact that we're getting recognized for this award and we're this small little community on Vancouver Island, when you think about the vastness of Canada, all the communities that are out there, all the amazing projects that are happening nationwide, for this small community to be recognized for this project at a national level is really quite something.
Harrison says on behalf of his colleagues at the CVRD and the large group of project partners,
we're really thankful for the recognition. And I think getting that recognition makes us feel like we're on the right path and we're moving forward in a good way.
Project Watersheds Director Perchalski looks forward to the impacts of the project.
I hope that people can really see the beauty that is the kind of convergence of all the different perspectives that we are being held by this project. So we have, you know, park and recreation space. We have ecological restoration. We have the Comox First Nation cultural values. All of these things are really being upheld by this project. And so I think when people are finally able to come out to this space and enjoy the park, they'll be able to see and sort of revel in the beauty that is the intersection of all of those things and how they really all uplift each other. And so I'm really excited for folks to get out to the site and be able to see that and enjoy it and just revel in the beauty that is the Comox Estuary.
Project completion and park reopening are slated for fall of this year. More information on the Dyke Road Park project and construction updates can be found on the CVRD website at comoxvalleyrd.ca/dykeroadpark. For CHLY and CVox News, this is Heather Watson.
Hey, Freeporty, what's hot?
Compost is hot.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. The University of Northern British Columbia is known as Canada's Green University, and as such, it's had an active composting program for years. For quite some time, though, the population on campus and the compost needs were relatively small, and PG PERG, or the Prince George Public Interest Research Group, took care of the compost on a primarily volunteer basis, where members of the UMBC community contributed their food scraps to bins placed around campus, volunteers would pick them up, and the compost pile was kept outdoors, where it was eventually converted into soil, available for university gardening programs, and even available to the public. However, as the university instated a meal plan, and on-campus food waste grew, it could no longer be dealt with on a strictly volunteer basis. The university stepped up by installing a sizable food processing machine in the recycle room below the administration building. You can hear it in the background churning. To get the program going, a student position was created. Keaton Friel applied for that position, got it, and took on the challenge.
What was your hip-hop name again? Freaky T?
Freaky T.
We're on location in the recycling room at UMBC with local hip-hop musician Freak Boy T, who's composed Compost is Hot, a hit single here on UMBC campus, but who also happens to operate UMBC's compost program, a.k.a. Keaton Friel, is that correct?
That is correct.
Right now, it looks as though the contract Keaton is under will expire in the spring with no plans for renewal. And he's trying to do something about that.
Yeah, I was actually only supposed to be a six-month contract. I've already been extended 3 months, which is great. And we've been advocating from the beginning to make this position permanent. We were basically tasked with demonstrating broad community support for the continued existence of this position, and that's what we're trying to do with collecting these letters of support through the Sustainability Office.
So it sounds like you do have some support gaining, there's some letters of support going on. Does it feel encouraging?
It does. It's been a really positive response. It feels good to see how many people care. Absolutely. They hired me to initialize the program, and the hope was that it would become self-sustaining. As the person who does this program every day, I really can't envision a situation where that's possible. it's a lot of work. We do about 500 to 700 kilos of food waste per week. This Sunday or Monday, depending on how much food scraps are produced by the catering events, we will hit 10,000 kilos of food waste diversion since September. Some of it contains contaminants, so I'm sorting garbage by hand. I categorize and weigh all of the waste. There's a recipe to follow to keep the compost quality where we want it, because we are doing now with this in-vessel composter, the first stage of composting is happening inside. So it's really important to manage the process correctly to not get odor complaints, because that could get us shut down, especially because we are in the basement of the admin building. So it'll go right up to the president's office if it's not taken care of. And the idea for how this program is supposed to operate without an operator is that the maintenance assistants will take it on. And I talked to the maintenance assistants, and they already work full time. They're busy people. And so am I. And I feel like the work that I do is not being recognized. If this idea continues to be put forward that everything that I do can just be absorbed into the workload of people who are already working full time.
Can you describe the lab coat that you've been wearing over the last little while? When did you start wearing it, and what does it say?
Yeah, so I was, because my position was supposed to be temporary, I was never given a uniform, but obviously this is a dirty job. So I have a lab coat, which I originally just stenciled UNBC compost operator in the back. That's because I wash the green bins in the custodial sink in the women's bathroom or around the corner from the cafeteria. I don't know what architect in the 90s was like, let's put it in a gendered bathroom, but that's the only convenient place to wash them. So I just wanted people to know why I was in there just doing my job. And then when we got to this point where we needed to gather public support to encourage UNBC to protect this, the continuation of this position, I added another message, which is tell UNBC to keep my job. Sustainability at unbc.ca. And that is the email where you can contact us and add your name to our letter of support or receive some guidance on how to make a personalized letter of support. I love this job, and I just hope that I can continue to do this work. I think that what we've done so far is a really good news story for UNBC, and I just hope that we can continue.
This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Earlier this February, the Multilingual Orientation Service Association for Immigrant Communities, or MOSAIC, recently opened a new community clinic in the Edmonds area of Burnaby, BC, which aims to serve newcomers to Canada, people who identify as First Nations, Inuit, and Métis, new mothers and their babies, people living with complex mental health issues, and people experiencing homelessness or precarious housing. To learn more about the healthcare services that the new MOSAIC Community Clinic would provide, CJSF got in contact with Dr. Baldev Sangera, a longitudinal care-providing family physician in Burnaby, the medical director of the Prime Care Medical Center and the Edmonds Urgent Care Center, as well as one of the leading physicians involved with designing the community clinic. During our discussion, Sangera spoke about the unique services the clinic would provide, as well as his belief that clinics such as these not only benefit those directly served by it, but their communities as a whole. Please take a listen for our full conversation.
So the thing about us, this clinic, is that it's unique in that we're targeting a not just one particular vulnerable population, but a group of vulnerable parts of the community that often fall through the gaps, right? And there's a lot of cracks in our healthcare system. And the folks that are the most vulnerable shouldn't be allowed to fall through. And in fact, we need to build a safety net that catches them. And this is our attempt here in Burnaby to do so. The other thing that this does also is this clinic will coordinate with other family practice clinics as well. So if we have family physicians and nurse practitioners that are practicing in their own practices in Burnaby, if we have patients that fit into these populations, and we need support, say, from somebody from a language perspective or a cultural perspective, then we can access that. Or if, say, one of my new young moms is having difficulty breastfeeding her baby, I will have access to a lactation consultant at this clinic, so I can refer there. So it's building extra resources for our community, as well as making sure that the vulnerable folks are also looked after.
One thing I wanted to ask was, because, you know, looking into the breadth of services that are being provided at this specific clinic, I think a lot of times when people hear clinic, they don't associate it with all of these different services being provided. So just to confirm, all of these are being provided specifically within the clinic center.
So yes, and there's a little bit more to the story.
Okay.
Right? Our primary care network, we've been quite innovative in trying to develop extra resources for the community of Burnaby. And so we've got this clinic, and then across the, so we've tried to develop what we call a campus of care, right? And so much like SFU has your campus, you have multiple buildings up there. Not everything's all in one building. And in Edmonds, we have tried to develop a campus of care around the corner of Edmonds and Kingsway. Right. And so this clinic is on one side of the street. Across the hallway in the same building, we have a whole bunch of allied health staff that work with Fraser Health to support the rest of all of us. And then across the street from this clinic, we have Prime Care Medical Center that has 14 family doctors there that are all housed together. And we also have the Edmonds Urgent Care Center in that same building. And we also have two other clinics, one that serves new immigrants in a clinic called Global Family Care Clinic, as well as the New Canadian Clinic, which is serving folks that are government-sponsored refugees. So we really wanted to make it as inclusive as possible, but it's not all in one clinic. It's in that shared one or two blocks. So access to each other for support. If the physicians need to support each other, we are able to do so. If the nurses need to come together with the team, we have access to them. So we can do a lot more than just the regular medical clinic.
Yeah, I mean, the way you're describing it, you know, the purpose of the clinic is to serve the community, but there's also what seems to be a community of people within the network serving people as well.
Yeah. So we have an extended team. And most folks are, you know, used to going to a family doctor and seeing that doctor, maybe a partnering doctor and an office secretary, and maybe a nurse. Well, we've taken that concept and just grown it a little bit more, added a few team members to make sure that the care that we deliver is a lot more wholesome, and we're able to meet all of the needs for each patient and their family. And so the clinic, this clinic and the clinic across the street are open from 8 till 5 in the daytime. And then the urgent care center will pick up from 5 p.m. till 9 p.m. And so they're open to make sure that folks, if they need urgent care, if you're making your dinner tonight, you happen to cut your finger, you need some stitches, well, you don't have to go wait in emergency for about 8 hours before you get stitches. You can call the urgent care center and we'll try to figure out how we can fit you in within the next hour or so.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so then, and we all collaborate with each other. We make sure that if one office is closed, the other office is open to pick up where they can. And then we make sure that we pass all the information about the care provided back to the physician that's providing the longitudinal care. And it's important that all of us understand that each one of us as an individual person, we should have access to a family physician that provides longitudinal care, but we also need to have access for urgent episodic care needs as well. We all get injured, we get sick, your kids get sick, and the family physicians can't, one family physician can't be available 24/7, but a team of care providers can.
Another thing you had touched on is the language aspect. You know, a lot of the people visiting this clinic, English isn't going to be their first language. And especially, you know, people who are newly arriving, they may be much more comfortable speaking a different language. How have you gone about the process of ensuring that no matter where someone comes from, they'll be able to be assisted regardless of which language they are most comfortable with? So
in Burnaby, we have, I think the last assessment that we did was that there was anywhere between 135 to 150 different languages being spoken. And our unique partnership with Fraser Health, the physician partnership with Fraser Health and all of the community service organizations, we're able to provide access to interpreters and translators for all of them. And so I need to know if you're coming to see me, what language you wish to speak in, and my staff will make sure that there's somebody available to interpret for you. And that interpretation could be over the phone, it could be in person, it could be over video. And we'll just make sure that you're comfortable accessing the care that you need. And also the partnership with all of our community service agencies also helps facilitate translation, not just from a language perspective, but also from a cultural perspective as well. So everybody can feel safe that they're getting the best care possible, which is appropriate for them from whichever background they come from.
Now, one thing that I've seen is, you know, one reason for the Mosaic or community clinic being opened where it was is because of the demand and also just the sheer diversity of Burnaby. Do you think this is something that could or should be implemented within other care networks throughout the Lower Mainland?
So what we were hoping to do is we wanted to be able to show ourselves and the government that there are certain needs that are not being met. And if we provide the appropriate supports for these type of community clinics open, then we can better meet the needs of the public in a more wholesome way, and therefore drive down the cost of care to the system. So and also less demand on the emergency rooms, as well as also making sure that the patient outcomes, long-term outcomes, are much better. Overall, in the long term, I think it's better for all of us as individuals, and from a community perspective, to have healthier individuals get access to the care when they need it in the space where they feel comfortable, and they get access to care that's culturally appropriate, which is not going to lead them down some other pathway to other problems. Yeah, it's a win-win for everybody. And ideally, if we had enough funding, I would like to see this idea spread throughout BC.
That's it for this week's Scoop. Catch us next week, Thursdays at 12 p.m. in Smithers, Thursdays at 4 p.m. in Burnaby, Fridays at 8 a.m. in Nanaimo, and weekdays at 7:30 in Prince George. The Scoop was made possible by funding from the Canadian government and the Local Journalism Initiative, a Community Radio Fund of Canada initiative.